for May the 16th, 2014, we talk about Microsoft's announcements about the Kinect, WildStar, and we ask you about your favorite arcade games. Welcome to the 61st Level. My name is Cole Ross.
My name is David Meismith.
My name is Ben Merkel.
And you're listening to The Level, a podcast for people who love video games. Thanks so much for listening, and thanks so much for joining us, you guys.
And you will not be listening to Dennis Furia.
No, he's out there in, you know, California with, you know, the majority of nature.
Went out California way.
Yeah, went out California way. And he's enjoying a nice little vacation, so he's not going to be here for this week or next week. But we march on. You know, he's only one of us. We have a quorum. Yeah.
We do.
Yeah. Huh. Neat. I just figured out what a quorum was. No, I've used that word accurately before, so that's cool.
Also a supermajority.
That's true, but I think that over, you know, I don't know. That presumes we all agree.
So. What qualifies a supermajority?
75%.
Oh, yeah. We just made it.
Yeah, but again, that assumes we all agree. So.
And is
well,
it?
We all agreed on it? Showing up.
True.
A quorum is not necessarily a majority, but more than
the minimum.
Not necessarily more than half, but a majority, or is it more than half?
It's just a required number of people.
Yeah, it's the minimum required number of participants for a thing to count.
What's the one that means like more than half, as opposed to just the most?
Majority. Majority is more than half. Plurality is just the most.
Yeah.
Okay.
Quorum.
Welcome to The Level, a podcast
about words.
Voting.
Yeah. Voting, whatever.
Well, that didn't go like I wanted it to. I wanted to talk about my new fan. I bet you can't hear it. It's a great fan. But here we are. No, it's fine. We chose our direction. I mean, we made our bed. We're going to have to lie in it.
We voted the direction in which we wanted to go.
Oh, that presumes that anything ever is intentional. So what do we have in store? Well, we've got the usual. We've got all three segments here. The brief, where we're going to talk about stuff that's happening. We've got the multiplayer. And then the grind, where we talk about things we've been playing. So why don't we get to it? Now it is time for the brief, where we talk about things that are happening in this world around us. This is the news section if you're a new listener. Does anybody have one they want to throw up there first? Otherwise, I have one that I can do, which is a big one.
I have one that I imagine other people will have.
Okay,
I would love to go first and steal someone's story.
Go.
Dang you.
Xbox One released that they were going to make a Xbox One sans Kinect. It's going to be released June 9th for $400.
Xbox One 2.0?
Maybe Xbox One, Xbox minus one. There we go.
Yeah. So Xbox Zero.
So they just kind of like went back on every decision they made.
Yeah.
Saying it's incredibly important for us to make sure that everybody has a Kinect. This is the future, et cetera, et cetera. Like, you know, I don't normally say like if you make a mistake, you should probably do what you can to correct it and go back on it. However, I'm going to also sound like an asshole here and say this shows a lack of resolve.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know.
It's like the worst of both worlds.
A little bit.
Well, I feel like the people that really got screwed are kind of the people that do have the Kinect, because I would imagine this would be a significant nail in its coffin.
Maybe, but I don't know. The Kinect might end up being this generation's hard drive. Where it was like really neat to have, you know, and outright required in a lot of instances. But, you know, there's a story that's related to this that says, hey, you know, Harmonix, you know, the company behind Rock Band, and now they're working on, they did a Kickstarter for the Amplitude reboot, remake, sequel, and also the developers behind Disney Fantasia Music Evolved, which actually looks kind of cool, looks really nice. They came out and basically said, there are two tweets that were sent out by Harmonix people. You know, after this announcement was done, this is at John T. Drake saying, "Oh, great! super great. And then Nick Chester responds, but also says, oh, good. And their official response is, we believe that tightly crafted motion games can be great genre-defining interactive experiences as we've proven with Dance Central franchise on Kinect for Xbox 360, and we're eager to prove it again with Disney, blah, blah, blah. But the spokesperson came out and said, as avid gamers, we're excited for fans to have more choices out there. As game makers, this platform change doesn't affect our strategy. It reinforces that we must continue to focus on building innovative, compelling, and well-designed motion experiences to motivate consumers to buy our games.
Have there been any good motion games that aren't part of Sports Friends?
No, I mean, like, Dance Central is pretty good, you know.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. No, I'm like, you know, Harmonix, they kind of do it right. However, their gut reaction is what's most interesting to me, because that kind of says to me what, like, I think a lot of developers are. You know, like, just like this seems like a vote of no confidence, they were hoping that their install base for this, you know, for this game that they're going to put out, this admittedly, you know, could have had the potential to be a really popular game, is going to be cut in half. Like, this is, you know, the big fracturing of the audience, right?
I guess, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know.
Don't care. I'm either going to get a PS4 or a computer.
Yeah, I don't know. Just move games seem to me like such a deplorable idea that I have a hard time. I don't know. I don't get it.
It has the potential to be cool. I think that, you know, if I did get an Xbox, it would be kind of neat to have the voice commands.
Voice commands I could see, but yeah. I mean, I should hope they're not. If they're getting rid of that because they're getting rid of the Kinect, that's just dumb.
Well, no, I mean, they've already done the work. It's in there. They're just losing the the microphone that's required for the voice commands.
But I mean, my freaking computer, like, a microphone costs what, a couple bucks?
Well, I mean, like, to be fair, I'm not an apologist for this or anything, but that actually is like a microphone that is meant to be used in that kind of circumstance, right? Actually pointing out, I think it's like a stereo mic, noise canceling. Like, it is a mic that is specifically for that. And, you know, they probably could just market another thing that's like, okay, here is the voice command module for your for your Xbox One, but that kind of seems, you know, to defeat the purpose a little bit. Of them getting rid of, of them getting rid of the pack and connect kind of thing.
I don't know. I feel like the difference is the voice commands are a good idea and movement commands aren't.
Okay.
Why?
I don't think running around in circles is why people play video games. Like, I think people, if they wanted to do that, people would, like, I don't know, if I wanted to dance, I would go out to the local salsa club.
I don't know. Like what you're saying is the same as, like, why would you play Guitar Hero when you could actually play guitar?
See, but the difference,
they're different things.
Yeah, I just feel like that it doesn't. It kind of strikes me as being similar to, you know, kind of the people that say, like, oh, if you're trying to lose weight, you should just, you know, like, replace all your snacks with broccoli. And it's like that fundamentally misses the point of why people play, you know, eat snacks.
Why people play broccoli.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, broccoli has some great grab. No, I just feel like, I don't know, like, I play video games when I want to not do things, not when I want to do things.
But not everybody has that, you know, mindset about it.
Yeah, so. Yeah, I suppose so.
I mean,
so.
Like, in general, I'm in favor of more experiences than fewer of them.
Oh, yeah, know? Like, I don't necessarily, like, have a problem with people that enjoy it. I'm just saying, I think, I'm not sure that's a majority.
Yeah.
Or a plurality or a quorum.
I don't know. Who knows if it's a majority? I think that, you know, Microsoft has realized they kind of lost that bet. But
yeah, I suppose so.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, it'll bum me out if this keeps somebody from making a really good game, right?
It is kind of fascinating. fascinating, though, how little, like, the controller of a console has evolved over the last, you know, like, 30 years. You know, it's basically the same thing. You know, like, some input for direction and some buttons for button pressing, you know? Like, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. You look at the Nintendo controller and you look at today's controller, I mean, they're... At the fundamental level, they are the same, you know?
Yeah, yeah, just kind of the notion of, you know, you put one level of abstraction over top of it. And, you know, I would say that there have been, you know, slight changes to that. The, you know, there have been, like, obviously, oh, here's touchpads. Oh, here's, you know, like, analog sticks are a big deal. You know, rumble, you know, and, like, just kind of configurations. Like, there are, like, more subtle ways that that, you know, like, has gotten better. But, like, you know... was it Gunpei Yokoi, the guy who did the D-pad? He kind of was onto something, right?
Yeah, I feel like that's fundamentally because it's just a good idea. You know, like, I mean, in the same way, I mean, how long have cars had wheels? Steering wheels, not... It'd be kind of weird if they didn't have wheels, like rubber.
Yeah. Yeah. No, hover cars.
Hover car.
Yeah. I don't know. But it's just funny to see Harmonix just put out, oh, great, super great. Because it does put them in a bit of a situation, right? You know, like, they're already dealing with kind of, you know, it's just a weird market. It's such a weird market now.
A little bit where I'm coming from, like, I really was turned off, particularly the Game Boy DS, where, like, every game had to have touchscreen and usually it was bad.
That eventually evened out, though. I mean, eventually all you had, you know, like Castlevania was like, here is like just a way to manipulate the map, and then there you go,
right?
Like that, like, but that, like, that was the doldrums when people, you know, before people realized that was like, you know, it wasn't compulsory.
See, and I guess that's my thing, is that's kind of then got me into my default mode, is I want this feature not to exist rather than it to get people to make dumb game design decisions, if that makes sense.
I mean, not in particular. I mean, do you think that having it there by, you know, by necessity means that they wouldn't have made some other stupid decision in its stead? Like, we, you know, like, just with it, that you know, without touch screens, would they have, you know, fucked up the interface in a different way?
I honestly, I would say no. I mean, granted, I'm not gonna say like it would have been like the perfect, like, you know, game that, you know, achieves enlightenment or whatever without that. I'm just saying, like, I think it was definitely a thing where, because the feature existed, they felt the need to use it when they shouldn't have. And I don't know, just in general, it doesn't seem like game developers tend to have, often lack self-control in that respect.
Yeah. We definitely shouldn't have steering wheels anymore because somebody made a PT Cruiser. Which one of you made a PT Cruiser? Yeah. I'm so angry. I am so angry that you guys made a PT Cruiser right now. obviously, I'm taking that a bit too far, but...
Sorry, I'm trying not to, like, spit a pop on my screen from laughing.
that's fine. Yeah, so that definitely was my story, Ben. It sounds like you're getting a little bit closer to your decision. It's down to the wire between a PS4 and a PC.
Nah, dude, the wire's always the best decision. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, I probably won't pull the trigger for like another 6 months because I'm lazy. But
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, what will make you make the decision, do you think? Is that just kind of like will it be the day before Arkham Knight comes out and you're just kind of like, okay, I've got to do whichever one will get me Arkham Knight the quickest, I'm going to do.
It'll probably be the realization that I do a video game podcast and I'm not keeping current on video games.
Oh, well, don't worry. I mean, we're in the twilight area between generations. Mm-hmm. It is perfectly fine.
The twilight zone.
Okay, yeah, a little bit. God, Rod Sterling is American treasure.
Yeah.
I don't know. I really didn't have any other story behind, like, aside from that. There is some kind of, you know, like a little bit of goofiness about the resolution on Watch Dogs. Like, you know, the stats are coming out and somebody is counting the pixels and, you know, realizing that on neither of the next gen consoles will it actually be true 1080p or something like that. Like on the PS4, it's going to be 900p, and on Xbox One, it's going to be 729p. Obviously upscaled, but you know, still not the true, you know, so and so at 60 frames per second. But yeah, I don't know. It's I'm not like the kind of person who counts those kind of things, but it's another situation where I feel a little bit better about my decision to get a PC because I can do that. You know, I can just get it at the right kind of thing. But
to what degree does that matter? Because I know like nothing about this. I paid for at my last house paid for like all the channels and then proceeded to watch all of them not in high def because I wasn't smart enough to like. Or motivated enough to do. I know nothing about this.
Yeah.
Can you actually tell 900 versus 1080 or like
900 versus 1080? Not so much. Like it actually like that is enough that if you know what 1080 looks like, you're going to notice it. However, like seeing them side by side or going from one to the other, it actually is appreciable. Last episode, I made kind of an offhanded remark. Saying that the PC version of Dark Souls 2 is like playing an HD remake of Dark Souls 2 right now, simply because, you know, on my PC it runs at 60 frames per second at 1080p, and it looks just amazing. Like that little bump in resolution from 720 up to that does make an appreciable difference, and especially with Watch Dogs, where everything kind of is in the details, it looks like, you know, and some kind of the impressiveness of it. Okay, so here's why I feel a little bit. Here's why I feel okay, kind of like even being concerned about this, is because like if I'm going to be playing that, part of it's going to be to get a little bit of the spectacle out of it.
Sure.
And so
sure.
You would want to get the one that gives you the most spectacle. I think the more damning number is the 729 on Xbox One, actually, because that's like straight up just a little bit better than what was on previous generation.
Sure.
You know?
Sure.
So
I do wonder, like, presumably. In a situation where, like, you were having a lot of movement, like, while actually playing an action game during a fight, you probably wouldn't be able to notice at all, correct?
It would depend on the frame rate, and it would depend on what kind of, like, motion filters and blurs and stuff like that.
Right, right.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah, I can see that.
And all that says to me is, like, oh, it's very early on in a console generation, you know, they're going to eventually figure out how to do this, but you know, it's just another one of those things that, you know, I'm noticing now that I'm on PC. So yeah, I don't know. Did you have any other stories? Anybody else?
No, that's why
I scraped to get one story, man.
Okay, I didn't know. No, so we got the three in. We got one per. Why don't we just go ahead to the multiplayer?
Triple kill.
Boom.
Multiplayer.
So it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you some questions about the life that you are living. And so, Dennis, he should be on vacation. Like, he should go away. I mean, like, one of us should be able to get away from this, right? You know, for a moment in their lives. But I assume tweeted from the road. Actually, yes, it does. It does say Dennis. posted by Dennis 7 hours ago, saying, multiplayer, some games are best enjoyed in the arcade. What are the coolest arcade games you've played? Yeah. So let's see here. Ben, what's Sean say?
Just a sec. Sean says... the Turtles/Simpsons/X-Men fighting games were always fun if you had a crowd of people and a roll of quarters. However, two stick with me. There was a Tron that was enclosed, and you played the disc game. You aimed your shot with a spinning wheel and moved it with the joystick. The way the cabinet was built made you feel like you were right in there. The other one is a game I cannot remember the name of, however. However, I remember the details. It had two control schemes. The theme was you were a Moon/Mars rover and had to drive with the steering wheel to collect these gems. The other portion was a gun, of course. You could either drive and shoot or two-player it. Once you got to the end of the driving, you got to a base that you had to shoot the gems you picked up. Oh, sorry. You had to shoot, and the gems you picked up were the ammo you had to shoot the base, I think. It's my white rabbit. I've been hunting for it or an image of it for a long time.
Okay, so mission for our listeners. If you know what that game is, write in to us or respond on the Facebook and let Sean know. Let's hive mind this.
Yeah.
Because that sounds interesting.
Yeah,
yeah, it does. Did any of you guys ever play Lucky and Wild?
Yeah. It was very confusing. Got motion sick playing it just because there was a lot going on. And just the graphical presentation wasn't up. I remember at the arcade fighting over who was going to be the driver, because if you were Wild or whatever, you know, if you were just the person in the passenger seat. So we should explain what Lucky and Wild is.
Yeah,
it's a driving and shooting game, except you know it's two player. The person in the passenger seat just shoots.
Right, and it's kind of set up to be like a buddy cop film is kind of the premise of why it has this weird setup.
Yeah, and like the first level is it's an homage or ripoff of the scene in the Blues Brothers where they drive through the mall, right?
Oh yeah, it is. I guess I never back when I played it, I hadn't seen it, so I never went back and made that connection.
Yeah. There's another one that's actually pretty cool. It's a vector kind of game. I forget the name of it, but let me just look at it. It's one of the illustrious pantheon of firefighting. Firefighting arcade games. But it was vector graphics, and one person would sit down at the front, and then another person would stand behind them. Both of you had wheels, and the front person steered the front, and the back person steered the back. And so the idea was to maneuver around the streets. With this, cooperative steering kind of thing.
Huh. Yeah, firefighting arcade games, I feel like, or have made me, very paranoid of, fire, because no matter what I did, you shoot water at it and it doesn't die.
Oh, yeah, there's that one, let me look at it here. I forget. It's Brave Firefighters, which was yes. A light gun shooter, except it was right there. There were a handful of firefighter RPGs on SNES too, but that takes us away from what we're talking about. And I can't find the name of the firefighting vector steering game. So if anybody else knows what that is, let me know too.
Or if the same person knows what it is, yeah. They can double down.
I played the firefighter one at PRGE, and I think that I have seen or played the Moon Rover one, except I couldn't say for certain. It seems like something that I would have played.
I feel like firefighter simulators is a real niche market.
Yeah. But when I do a Google search for firefighter arcade games, all it does is pull up stuff like on Kongregate.
Hmm.
Yeah. Oh, well.
Perhaps the internet does not have a memory then.
Mm. No, it definitely does.
All right.
Sorry.
not if the EU has anything to say about it.
All that I'm saying is, the one of the future presidents of the United States is going to have a shot of their genitals in the Snapchat database. It's happened. It's happening. It's already happened. Have fun.
It will have happened.
Yes. Future pluperfect. David, what's Quentin say?
No, I have to pass this one off. I do not have a surfer voice.
Okay. Hydro Thunder! Says Quentin Caster. To be the instructions there to be read in the over-exaggerated DJ surfer dude voice. I remember getting this game for the PS1 and liking it a lot. Imagine my surprise when I went to my local movie theater and found a giant Hydro Thunder machine. Too bad the silly comm chatter was drowned out by everyone else playing Max 300 X2 Double Pad No Bar Bro DDR. Yeah. No, Hydro Thunder was great. Had great force feedback on the handles. And what am I thinking of here? Really really awesome graphics at the time. If you're going to do the console version, the Dreamcast one I think was pretty arcade faithful. But that makes sense because Sega. Yeah.
I actually spent this afternoon watching clips of Keanu Reeves trying to get my surfer voice right, and no, I am apparently unable to do this.
And you just flinched at the very end. How about one of you guys? Since I read that one, I'll give mine. I'd have to say Pac-Man Championship Edition. I think that's what it is.
Okay.
It is the Oh man, it's beautiful. They have it at Ground Control out in Portland, but I've seen it in some other places too. It's a cocktail cabinet, and it's
those are cool.
It's four player. It's four player competitive Pac-Man. So you have four different colors of Pac-Man. You have some ghosts. All of you are getting power pellets, except when you get a power pellet, your Pac-Man turns gigantic. and you can eat the other Pac-Man. So, yeah. You know, it's not Pac-Man Championship Edition. I forget exactly, like, what it's called, because Namco
Pac-Man
has...
Pac-Man Cannibal Edition?
Maybe. Like Pac, it's a Pac-Eat Pac World. but, yeah, it's fucking great. And, you know, it's a great, you know, kind of competitive, cooperative, you know, version of this weird, you know, of this weird anomaly of a game that got really popular. Pac-Man, you may have heard of it. Yeah, so that's I think that's mine, just because it's a beautiful cabinet and it reimagines something that I was kind of used to. David, so to you know, redeem yourself, why don't you tell us what Joseph said?
All right, Joseph says, I had the honor and displeasure of working in an arcade as a video game tech while in high school. I got to know my games pretty well, and within my possession were the keys to every machine. Oh. My favorite by far was the Star Wars Trilogy cabinet. Ooh. Close second was House of the Dead and San Francisco Rush. With the keys in hand, it meant unlimited credits. Best part of that job, worst part was, hey, that game over there ate my token.
You only got them through toilets no more, do you? Yeah, no, it's... I couldn't imagine working at an arcade. Like, I got a little bit of a taste of that when I was working at GameStop, like when a little kid would bring in his Game Boy Advance collection trying to trade it in, and we'd have to break his heart and say, oh, you know, each of these is only worth 25 cents. And then them, you know, looking around, like, so, like, what it turns into is, how much can I get for this many? And so making them make a decision. And thinking about the agony that I put those people through, trying to decide if I was going to use my tickets to get a mustache comb or a Tootsie Roll. Like, that would just be the worst. And just dealing with, like, hey, kids, stop fucking in the Jurassic Park machine. Just...
Ooh.
Yeah, no. Think about it.
He grew up quick.
So...
Life will find a way, Cole.
Yeah, like... No, sorry, I had the wrong laugh. yeah.
You doing a Goldblum impression?
Yeah. Yeah, no, so that's a, you know, I really like the Star Wars Trilogy cabinet, actually. If only for the, the lightsaber dueling.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
That was kick-ass.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Smart play. Joystick to double up as a lightsaber.
Yeah. Good.
I felt like that one really needed a button that was, like, skip straight to lightsaber fight.
It was a nice little dessert, I think. But, like, the actual missions, like Yavin and Hoth and, oh gosh, Endor's moon, was pretty good. I don't know. I remember being impressed by the graphics. God, just why did Sega ever do consoles? Like, they really just should have just made arcade games, because that's where they were obviously best. Let's see here, David. How about you? You got a favorite arcade-y?
I really, really like Light Gun.
Light Gun.
Wow, Light Gun games. Particularly, my favorites were I liked Ocean Hunter. That was kind of cool. And but probably my favorite was the House of the Dead series.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, just, you know, they're pretty good games. I kind of liked the I thought the alternate, like, the different routes through the level thing was kind of cool. And I don't know, just, it's kind of weird, like, there's virtually, you know, no actual storyline or, like, plot development to it, but kind of the implied sort of like Lovecraftian, you know, science and magic setting. I don't know. I really, really liked.
I think they actually built it out, like the plot, because I remember there being like characters and stuff in House of the Dead too. Like,
yeah, there actually were, like, in all of them, and there actually is a plot that goes, like, through the background of it.
Mm-hmm.
Most notably, like, after the second game, basically, like, the world ends.
Yeah.
So yeah, there actually is a plot, but they just never really flesh it out in the games itself to any significant degree.
Yeah. What I liked is that, you know, with each House of the Dead game, they kind of upped the game on the actual gun. So like, if you got like one of the genuine non in, you know, Area 51 in an arcade bar, or sorry, in a bar, you know, cabinet of House of the Dead, it had like the force feedback on it.
Sure.
So you, when you press the button, it would, you know, it would slide the lock or lock the slide, whatever. It would slide the slide, like
yeah,
not
locking the slide.
Yeah.
Unless you're out of ammo.
kind of like oh gosh, when I think of Time Crisis. But then they went up to like shotguns and submachine guns.
Yeah, I mean, granted, part of that being the fact that, you know, the world ended, so heavy artillery was in. Need apparently, but the third game, I believe you upgrade to your like default weapon as a shotgun, and then the third one, or rather the fourth one, they do kind of the Time Crisis, like, you know, lots of different weapons. Your default, I believe, was a submachine gun, and you also got grenades.
Yeah. Did you ever play Carnival?
Yes, actually. Yeah, that was another game that the game itself was a little, you know, quirky. It was all right. But the actual, like, sort of pseudo backstory and, like, the kind of the personality they put in the actual levels was really, really cool.
Yeah. No, and then just, again, these horror-themed ones. Just the idea that it was, you know, an evil circus kind of thing. But, again, that controller, the fact that it was a shotgun and you reloaded by pumping the pump.
yeah, that was a nice feature.
Like, you slide the slide, you pump the pump.
I'm shaking my head at you. You should know this.
No, I'm just... I think they were actually making some kind of new dance craze. Yeah, this is...
Slide the slide, pump the pump. Yeah.
And that's how you do the hump the hump.
Wow.
Yeah. Once got busy in a Burger King bathroom. Yeah. That's a reference that is about as old as I am. Okay. So, oh, man. Let's see here. Whose turn is it to read the next one?
I believe it's mine.
Yeah.
So, Slade says, the best MP experiences, multiplayer experiences, I've had in arcades. Do these still exist? They do in Japan. Were the Metal Slug, Time Crisis, House of the Dead, and Dance Dance Revolution series, along with the Jurassic Park Lost World game.
Oh, you only say that because of the fucking...
I had to search my memory. I'm like, wait a second. That doesn't happen in the game. No. I was never much of a fighting game guy, but a lot of those were... a lot of fun as well.
Yeah. Yeah, not a lot of fighting game representation on here.
Yeah. I will have to echo his comment of Jurassic Park Lost World. I enjoyed that arcade game a lot. I liked it because of the pooping.
Yeah.
Just because you had to shoot a dinosaur as it was pooping. And you could never do that.
Yeah.
But
I never got... how, like, shooting a dinosaur in the tonsils was, like, integral to not getting eaten.
Yeah, it's because
they get filled up on bullets. Yeah.
It's
but they have
diet.
A very quick metabolism.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that game. And then I also like, I believe we already mentioned it. Yeah, the Star Wars game, the trilogy game.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty solid.
Yeah.
Those are only for nostalgic reasons, though, nothing more.
Yeah. Let's see here. OMG a Moose. There we go. Or Omega Moose.
Omega Moose.
Yes. Oh, the ender.
The final Moose.
The ender of Mooses. A tie between Aliens versus Predator and the D&D arcade games. D&D is an obvious choice for anyone who has ever played it or even bought the release on Steam. An action RPG that you can play with your friends next to you? Sign me up. And Aliens vs. Predator is basically the best parts of the movies, but letting you play them and ending each stage with a Capcom trademark. Oh. Not to mention, I got to play through AVP with Gary while Cole watched. Sorry, Cole. Yeah.
Is that the one? It's kind of like a fixed emplacement gun?
No, you might be thinking of Terminator 2, Judgment Day.
See, no, it was at least an Aliens game. I'm not sure if Predators got invited.
Yeah. It's another one of the I think it's Capcom beat 'em ups. It's in the same
kind of
vein series. Yeah, it's like Sunset Riders or The Simpsons, you know. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, they played the shit out of AVP. Yeah, at Ground Control again. Speaking of that time, Pac-Man Championship Edition as a tabletop arcade game is awesome. And if I had one, I'd invite friends over like every day for that game plus drinks. Yeah, cocktail, like drinking and arcades go together so well.
Hence Barcade.
Oh yeah.
Wait, is this a thing?
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean that's it's. I can't name all of them, but Barcade is specifically one in Brooklyn, I think.
Correct.
Yeah, and then Ground Control's out in Portland. There's one in Chicago that I know of. Like what they'll do is they have either those cocktail ones that actually have places for drinks, or the stand up ones they will just have drink holders affixed to them, and just they serve beers, and you just go around and play.
Huh.
Yeah. No, it's fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I want to also give a shout out to the Aerosmith game because I just remembered that
Revolution
game.
Revolution X, where the music is
not
your weapon.
Because it was a good game.
Oh yeah.
Because it's like the Demolition Man of arcade games.
Yeah. What was the premise of that? Like that. That's one of those games I always saw. Doing its way. What they call it, like attraction mode. I could never figure out what the heck was supposed to be going on.
No. So it's like Half-Life 2, but instead of guns, you just have CDs. And it's as if Steam had, or if Valve had to work in a product placement of Aerosmith throughout the entire game.
Yeah. So there's like a New World Order-esque army that is being sent out to stop all rock and roll. And Aerosmith happens to be like the leaders of the resistance. And so you have to stop the. And so everything is like digitized full actors, kind of like like Mortal Kombat or Lethal Enforcers. It's like a rock and roll Lethal Enforcers.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
Don't give up.
The worst digitized version of Love in an Elevator. Yeah. But that should be my ringtone, actually. Some music from that. We did that on the first episode of Abject Suffering, actually.
Nice.
That was a good time. Yeah.
I feel like there was a distinct moment, maybe we call it the 80s, I'm not sure, where oppressive government outlawing rock was like its own genre.
Yeah. Pump Up the Volume with Christian Slater. Took over it, you know. It took over the imagination of a nation, right?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, no. John Lithgow out there saying you can't stop that sexy dancing, you know. Yeah, nobody puts Lithgow in a corner. Sorry, I'm double back on myself. Oh man, David, what's Phil say?
This is I see that Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles has been covered, So I'll have to mention the food memory I have of going to my only local pizza parlor. By local, I mean 20 miles. Hmm. And playing the three-man version of Super Off-Road.
Oh, shit, yeah.
The steering wheel controllers took a lot of abuse from greasy fingers. But for me, it was a great way to pass time before eating a great meal. Is that the top-down racer?
Yeah. So
yes, that was awesome.
Mm-hmm. I think a similar one was also like RC Pro-Am that was like that. And what was great is you actually could like over multiple games boost the stats of your rally cars or whatever they were.
Right, and you could like buy nitros and stuff.
Yeah. And so like any of those that were like top down, by necessity you had to be able to rotate the steering wheels free rotate. So like on an actual steering wheel, it stops at a certain point because the wheels can only go so far, which led to all those games being played by a lot of people, kind of like foosball. Where people just kind of slapped at the wheels to make it spin as quickly as they could. Yeah. Yeah, this is good memories. I love arcade games.
Can I throw out one extra one?
Yeah, sure.
Do you remember? I think we actually played it at Dennis's bachelor party. because apparently for a bachelor party we play video games. Because yeah. Anyways, the Rambo game.
Oh yeah.
Oh, First Blood. Like a was it a light gun shooter?
Yeah.
Yeah, more or less. It was a light gun shooter that, like, at every other level, it would pull out this weird, like, cutscene that kind of did the light gun equivalent of a QuickTime event.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So it would be like, you know, you have to sneak up on a dude and, like, knife the sentry, but for some reason you're using a light gun to do it. Similarly, I think there's one where you had to, like, shoot a bow and arrow and, like, shoot the arrow through the presumably bulletproof window of a attack helicopter avatar star.
Oh my god, so this is actually like a recent game. Like it's 3D. Like this is
oh, yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
cool. I was picturing like Operation Wolf or something like that.
No, although not that different in practice.
Wow. Yeah, there's a whole crop of those, like especially in the racing scene. Like there's one company that's actually making a lot of money right now by putting out like Fast and Furious racing games and like Fast and Furious bikes and stuff. Like just these weird licensed titles that are making that are making this comeback and, you know, basically where all of the old Area 51 cabinets used to be.
I do feel like there is some weird thing where arcades are the only realm in video games where you can have decent movie licensed games.
Example.
Well, we've been talking a lot about like Aliens and Star Warses and Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. I mean, I guess a lot of these aren't directly directly movies, so maybe that's not fair. But
yeah, well, I mean, like I would totally agree for like pinball. Like, you know,
that's true.
The Addams Family pinball machine is amazing. Twilight Zone pinball, amazing. Like, I can't think of just a straight pinball machine that isn't licensed. But then again, I'm not great at pinball, so I don't know.
Actually, there are a few. There are more than a few. You can find them at the Pinball Hall of Fame in Las Vegas. There's one that's really awesome where it's a bar fight pinball machine. And so at a certain point, there's a person that turns around and you have to hit him with the pinball to beat him, to simulate boxing him. It's great.
It's great.
See, I felt like my trouble with a lot of the like more the cooler pinball machines is I don't have a lot of control. And I feel like a lot of the more artistic, for lack of a better word, pinball machines kind of trade on like being able to like actually aim.
Yeah.
Hmm.
I don't know. I never feel like I'm in control of pinball. Yeah.
It's like the Fast and the Furious. When you're not in control, you're not.
Oh, you beat me to it.
let's Tokyo Drift away from that.
Which apparently was a fairly decent arcade game.
I played it. It's all right. You know, it's a racing game. Oh man, Ben, have you gotten a chance to say what yours is?
I name dropped some, but let me read Jala's comment because she shares a lot of other ones that I'd also like to name drop. Mm-hmm. She said, Jala says, Star Wars Pod Racer. That was awesome. Just as an experience, although I sucked at it. As to playing with people, lots of Area 51, X-Men, Simpsons, and D&D Shadow over Mystara.
Yeah.
But, dude, totally got a second. Area 51, X-Men, and Simpsons. Those were three good ones.
Yeah, I have such great memories of X-Men and Simpsons.
Can I share an awesome memory of X-Men?
Yes.
It was when I was in Ironton, Ohio, which is like the middle of nowhere, Ohio, which is where my dad lives. We were at a bowling alley, and there was a X-Men arcade machine, and it was broken to the point where you could pull forward the console with the buttons on it. And you could see the part where the coin acceptor was and where the sensor was, or where a quarter would like flick it when it is inserted. So you could just open it up, tap that a whole bunch of times, and get infinite credits.
Oh, and be a filthy thief.
Yeah, pretty much. But that was the only time that I've ever beaten the X-Men game in, you know, in an arcade setting.
Yeah.
But that game, well, All right, so that game is a filthy thief to people's quarters with how it's set up.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. You know, it's funny because I think that game was found exclusively at bowling alleys. That was my experience as well. Not with, you know, the thieving, but with being there at the bowling alley for, like, peewee bowling on, like, Saturday mornings, like, just totally not wanting to be there. And in between frames, going up to play X-Men, and whenever it came to be my turn, they would have to come and grab me until it got in so much trouble that I think I got kicked out of the league. I can't be sure. and then at the oh my gosh, at the Coliseum, the skating rink, they had a they had a Simpsons machine, and whenever I'd go there for a birthday party, you know, for a skate party, I would spend all of my time playing the Simpsons because holy crap, it's the Simpsons. Like, I love the Simpsons.
Yeah.
I'm young Cole in the mid-90s.
They also had one. It was like some sort of like Vietnam War themed like shooter, where you would like, I think it was like joystick, you know, controlling your little crosshairs, and you would like kill all the dudes on screen, and then your guys would proceed to sort of sashay to the next like screen. Do you remember that?
Yeah,
Apocalypse Now. That's now in arcades.
It's back in Pog form. Yeah. And yeah, I have no recollection of that one. I spent so much time playing The Simpsons.
Yeah, that was a great game.
Yeah. Then that place burned down.
Whoa. Way to bury the lead on that story.
Wasn't that like arson?
I think it might have been insurance fraud. I don't know. Oh gosh!
Burned down as Coliseums do.
Oh yeah. And then I'll round us out with Jeffrey Lawton here, Geo Law, coming in, playing anchor, saying, "Man, Time Crisis is just really satisfying. That recoil, but it is the picture for the multiplayer. What? So I guess that'll probably be covered. Oh, but it's the picture. I didn't even see that. It's the picture that on the Facebook post that that Dennis shared. So yeah." Time Crisis, strangely enough, only came up when talking about House of the Dead. But yeah, that recoil is great. The adding a cover mechanic really brought a lot to that, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do feel like I've probably developed some sort of like Pavlovian response to it. If someone just randomly shouted action, I would try to like kill everyone I saw.
It's a mucha. So you wander onto a set and then just somebody shouts, yeah, and did action, and then you just draw.
I'm just,
it's time.
James Franco died tragically today.
I'm just saying, I think it was secretly a plot by the communists to like turn children into sleeper agents.
Oh yeah, Manchurian candidates for sure. I mean, what other reason could there be? Yeah,
Occam's razor.
Oh,
no, that was one of those games, a little bit similar to like Street Fighter was the same thing, where like if you actually paid attention to the storyline, it makes no sense.
Yeah, and, you know, it's one of those things. It's like a knot. The more you pull at it, the more it tightens.
Yeah.
Yeah. So thank you, everybody, for responding to that. And thank you, Dennis, I think, for putting that out while you're on vacation. So I didn't ask you to do that.
Or whichever random admin we've made.
you know, so there have been some long, dark nights. Oh, man, just adminning everybody at will. So, randos. Yeah.
Right.
So if you want to participate in the conversation, that is facebook.com/TheLevelPodcast. Those generally go up on Tuesday afternoons or some such.
The grind.
Now it is time for the grind, where we talk about things we have been playing. Dogs, I have been playing much.
You have been playing much?
I have not.
I can jump in.
Do it.
I'm playing a game.
Oh, wow.
I know. This is an exciting time in podcast. I think I had mentioned this last episode, but I had ordered BioShock 1 because we announced this. We're going to play through BioShock and BioShock Infinite to you know, be current. And I also got Dead Space 2 because that was a series that I played the first game but never really picked up anything else on it. Mm-hmm. So I started playing Dead Space 2.
Ah, oh, nice.
Yeah. I had a limited amount of time to play games this week because I was in a wedding in Detroit for, I think, 5 of the days. But, yeah, so I've basically just gotten into the intro.
Oh, where gosh, just, that intro.
It's just a lot of dying. It's a lot of blood.
That is one of the best intros in the game.
Which one are we talking about?
Dead Space 2?
Okay.
Dead Space 2.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's cool. It's cool, I guess.
That,
I don't know.
That dude gets right up in your face. It's not too much of a spoiler. It happens like right away, but also yeah. The game is 6 years old. But
it's a good turn. It's a good turn.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we'll see how this game goes. But it's not as scary as the first one from when I played that in college. Because yeah. that was a long trek to get through that game.
The comparison that was bandied about was that Dead Space 2 is to Dead Space 1 as Aliens is to Alien.
That's a good comparison. Yeah. Yes.
And so like Dead Space 2 is going to hit you over the head with like a lot of gore and I would say kind of like exhaustion, whereas Dead Space mm-hmm. 1 is definitely about kind of tension and suspense.
Mhm.
You know.
Yeah, I think that's a fair comparison.
That's pretty
awesome. I've only jumped once so far in the game. So whatever. I've only jumped once while playing the game.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
But I've only played for like 5 minutes, so that's still pretty good.
Yeah.
But so we'll see. I'll keep progressing in that, so I'll actually have something to talk about. But
I have a lot of good memories of that game, so I'm going to be curious to have you bring those back up.
All right. Yeah, cool. On to you, David. What do you got?
Sure. Sorry, I was looking at... I got sidetracked by Bioshock. I actually mainly have been playing they're currently doing a open beta for WildStar. Have you guys seen this at all?
No.
It's basically I'm not sure who actually makes it, but it's more or less what would happen if Pixar made an MMO.
Okay.
So it's set in kind of a science fiction-y setting, they've just, you've got your totalitarian, like, evil faction and your, like, scrappy underdog faction, and they both have, just gone to this planet that's, is the homeworld of the, ever-present, like, aliens who came before and suddenly disappeared. So it's real generic sci-fi thing, but it's done with real cartoony kind of Pixar style presentation and aesthetics. That's real cool.
Mm-hmm.
So I know it's really really good. The character design, the stuff like that is really, really neat.
It's kind of like a furry aesthetic to it.
Say that again?
Has kind what? Of like a furry aesthetic to it?
Some of it does. Most notably...
Wait. You're going to need to describe what a furry aesthetic is.
I mean, just go into a convention hall and fucking... No, what I mean is, like, at least one of the factions looks to be, let's say just, I don't know, like animal people, anthropomorphic, it looks like furries. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, what it is one of the races on the evil side are basically like tiny psychopathic gerbil people.
Okay.
They're basically Stitch. So,
Where's Dennis when we need him?
Yeah, let's get him pissed off.
Exactly. I think, like, on the evil side, you basically have, like, evil space fascist humans, giant killer robot people, killer lizard people, and, like, the before-mentioned, evil hamsters.
Yeah.
And I think my favorite part about them is one of the options for faces for the evil hamsters is just, like, the glassy-eyed, like, gerbil eyes.
Like photorealistic gerbil eyes.
Yeah, like literally, like take up like 2/3 of their, you know, face, just like all, you know, just like puppy dog eye, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
That's actually one of my favorite things about it. One of the races on the Exiles, kind of the rebel side, is basically cat people, you know, like anime-esque cat people.
Cat people run. Yeah.
But it's done, I would say, kind of self-awarely, in that it's very much, very obviously done to be like, we're going to completely double down on making this as anime-esque as possible.
Yeah. Well, I mean, tell me about the play, honestly.
Sure. The actual play, I don't know how much you guys played, like, any of the recent MMOs, where kind of the big thing now is, you know, for your enemy's powerful attack, they'll, you know, mark out on the ground where it's, you know, going to happen, so you have to get out of the way.
It's like a League of Legends thing.
Yeah, exactly. So basically, they kind of have built their system around this, in that that happens for almost every attack. And so a lot of there are melee characters, but there's a lot more gunplay. And so all of your guns will have like a relatively small like slice of, you know, where you'll hit or where the enemy will hit. So it's a lot more, kind of creates, you know, a lot more dodging out of the way and, you know, moving as you go through the fight.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a lot of fun. Each of there's, I think, 6 classes, each of which has their own resource system. You know, very well animated. It's, it seems like they're definitely trying to make the gameplay a little bit more fun than MMOs usually are.
Yeah. Well, you've been chasing after this for a good long while, though, like the action-based MMO, right?
Yeah, yeah. And I would say it's not, you know, it's not completely, you know, just an action game, but I feel like it takes the kind of the traditional MMO format and actually makes it much more fun, much more skill-based. And, you know, also I feel like the animations kind of help with it, because they do a lot more, well, I guess the animation's much more animated.
Yeah. No, I mean, just like looking at the videos here, I can't tell how distracting that would be, honestly, from like the play that it's expecting to do. Like, even down to like the gunplay, it looks like it takes place in cones. Like,
yeah,
outside of
exactly.
It, so, you know, they get around, like, lag by having it not so much be, hey, is your cursor over this person when you hit? It's more, is the person inside the cone? And then if they are, then it applies the combat stats to it. It's just my guess based on looking at what I see, right?
Yeah, yeah, that's basically what it is. It also allows you to do, multiple enemies at once, you know, with this, you know, kind of do an AoE naturally.
Yeah.
And one of the things I like is that they have the Quake-esque announcer, so if you get, like, a double kill or whatever.
Yeah. So, I mean, how much of this is persistent world, and how much of it is, like, oh, here's an arena for you to fight in? Like, is this, like, just a more action-based Guild Wars?
From what I've seen, it's all been persistent.
Okay. Yeah, so like just you say in the announcer thing, and then just kind of looking at what I see here, which makes it actually look like a little bit like Quake.
No. The announcer is just for flavor. I also enjoy the fact that when you gain your first level, the announcer shouts, you know, "Oh shit, you gained a level! Way to go, Cupcake!"
Aww.
It's very. It's more just kind of supporting the over-the-topness.
Yeah.
The other cool feature they have is, in addition to choosing your class, you also choose your path, which is, you basically can choose, like, whether you want to focus on combat, building, lore, or exploration. And
so is it similar to, like... Borderlands 2, where, or just Borderlands, where you pick a class, but then there's like a branch within each class.
Well, no, it's more, I mean, it does have that, but it's more you'll then get side quests related to your path. And it's almost kind of like a profession, or like the way like crafting systems tend to be. So, for example, if you play the science class, you basically get missions to scan various like creatures and objects in order to get more background lore. There's a settler is one of them, where basically you can like build up semi-persistent structures that other players can use to get buffs. The combat profession, you can basically start multiplayer quests on the fly to kind of like horde mode type things.
Yeah.
So it's more of kind of a little bit of a customization in terms of like how you get your side quests.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like the game's approximation of crafting too.
Yeah, I mean, there is actually a crafting system. I've not done anything with it yet, but there it does exist. But yeah, it's very similar in practice to kind of the role crafting, you know, the way crafting's usually handled.
Yeah. So this is WildStar, and NCSoft is the publisher, maybe the developer behind it. Yeah, it's the Guild Wars people. So Guild Wars and Lineage and a bunch of other stuff that looks Korean in nature.
Also City of Heroes.
Yeah, but that's not a thing anymore, so it is not worth mentioning.
Not if Kickstarter has its way.
What? There's a Kickstarter to bring City of Heroes back?
Yeah, I actually haven't looked into it as much as I should, because City of Heroes is one of the greatest games of all time. No, it's a Kickstarter basically to do a spiritual successor to City of Heroes.
Yeah, City of Titans.
Yeah, and I think maybe they have like some degree of like blessing from someone.
All right, so here's my opinion on some of this bullshit. Okay, like you see this in, you know, just in Kickstarters, and especially looking at like some of the worst Kickstarters out there. Like people saying, "Hey, we can make a full featured MMO for like $50,000." No, you can't. Even then, even here, you know, the Phoenix Project, City of Titans, their goal was $320,000, which like doesn't seem like enough money to make an MMO. Like what this feels like is like a take of money and run kind of thing. Like you just,
that's true.
Like I just can't see that ever being successful.
Yeah, that does seem rather low. Has anyone ever? Like, is there been a rule of thumb put out for how much, like, an MMO?
I mean, a shitload, right?
I mean, I would have thought at least a million.
Yeah. I mean, like, if you were talking order of magnitude, probably in the millions.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, just kind of like, because you have that initial money and, like, hey, maybe you're going to get, you know, hey, maybe you're going to get some subscription, you know, details, right? Like you're, you know, like people are actually going to subscribe. However, I haven't read the rewards in detail, you know, in any close measure. However, I'm saying however way too much. I assume a lot of it is like lifetime membership or something like that. So what they've done is they've gotten, you know, they've basically mortgaged the future viability of this. And, you know, when they put this out, and everybody gets to the end game within like a week, and like, oh, like we really didn't think about making more content. Like maybe we'll have enough money to do it, and then people go away, and then they don't have any subscription details, or they don't have any subscription coming in. It just kind of seems, I don't know. Maybe an MMO isn't something you crowdfund. Maybe like you crowdfund a thing with a finite end.
Ugh. Yeah, I know. Have there been any crowdsourced MMOs? I can't say I've heard of any.
I mean, there have been plenty. Like the awful Kickstarter's thread on Something Awful is full of them. It's like, hey, $20,000 for a full featured MMO that has a fully deformable terrain, and everybody has their own house, and like all this weird stuff that sounds like you actually kind of don't know what you're talking about, do you?
Well, I guess I was meaning ones that actually made it to market and any degree to which
not so far as
successful.
I know. I've seen plenty that are funded, but I haven't actually seen, like, on joystick or whatever, hey, here is, you know, like, here is an MMO that was crowdfunded and it was the best thing ever and everybody was very happy. You know, even the most, even
and they had cake.
And, like, even the most successful, like that Star Citizen or whatever, that's never coming out. Like,
right.
Sorry, didn't mean to fly off the handle there.
No, like, yeah, that does seem weird. I've actually followed it. The only scenario I could see that being successful is if they were planning on literally resurrecting City of Heroes and, like, getting access to the original resources, yeah. And I would think NCSoft wouldn't be cool with that, but yeah. Who knows?
Yeah, if it was like, hey, give us the money to buy the license so that we can just run a shard of this, you know, kind of frozen in time so people can, you know, can continue with it. But you
and
know.
Grant, I would pay for that. I mean, but...
Mm-hmm. Oh, anything else, man?
No, I think that's about it.
Cool. Yeah, so I usually do most of my game playing on the weekends. However, I had a bachelor party this weekend. All day.
Weddings are in the air, man.
Yeah, man. Yeah, all day on Saturday was the bachelor party, and then all day on Sunday was Cole laying in bed sick. So that's led to Cole being very busy and trying to catch up on stuff because weekends are also when Cole does everything. So,
was it viral sick or was it boozy sick?
It was boozy sick.
All right.
I don't have an awful lot of situations where I like drink all day, you know. So. Which is good. I think that says something about the way I live my life. However,
just drink all night, you know.
Yeah. No, but yeah. So it, you know, it was a good time. However, got really sick, came home, threw up all night, slept in for most of the day. Yeah. No, I just kind of like, oh, like what that says to me is, yeah, that time of your life has passed. Enjoy not doing that anymore. Yeah. So.
Yeah.
So that's pretty cool. All I really have to bring to the table is mobile stuff, so I'll kind of get two out of the way here real quick. Who knows? Let's take a look here. So the big one, and this is one that I am kind of going to talk about just to talk shit, is Trials Frontier.
Okay.
So you guys know about the... good?
What is it?
Okay, so Trials, really fun games, especially on like the consoles, you know, when you pay $15 and then you get a game that you can play for as long as you want, because that's the way that games used to work. It's a kind of like a motorcycle stunt game. So it's like side-scrolling, and you have control over your speed and your tilt as you go along. And the idea is you do stunts as you go from left to right, and you know, you want to get through the obstacles without crashing. It's kind of like a really difficult, skill-based game. And you have, you know, like, I forget if the main ones have upgrades. I think the first couple and the ones I really liked, you just had your bike as it was. So, yeah, this has the potential to be really fun. Like, I was playing on the iPad. You know, it does require precision, but it's not like, oh, am I going up or left? Like, you have those controls. So, the digital D-pad doesn't bother me an awful lot, right? And I was looking forward to just having this here. I went to download it, and it said free. Uh-oh. Yeah, so... they've done a couple things I really don't like with it. First, they gave it a story, which, you know, the story of Trials ought to be, motorcycle man needs to get from the left side of the screen to the right side of the screen. What is he going to do? Oh, there you go. You're going to help motorcycle man do this. Here, you're going to fall down a couple times, but you're going to be better at it by the end. So have you know, just have fun. Enjoy the ride, right? No,
in
this,
a world where motorcycle man needed to cross the screen.
Yeah, like that should be the story.
First they took his wife, then they took his children to the right side of the screen.
Then he took their lives. Vroom, vroom. Yeah. Oh, man. So it's like, you know, you're riding along, and then there's like the badass motorcycle guy, but he's like the villain, and all of it takes place. So it's called Frontier. It takes place on like the wild frontier. So you're like in a western town, and you have like
where there's plenty of motorcycle trails.
Yeah, yeah. But it's like post-apocalyptic, so they're trying to go for a bit of a like Borderlands kind of feel.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So, like, you know, whatever, like, if they wanted to make that just the prevailing aesthetic, I think a couple of the games were going in that direction, fine. Make it look like whatever you want, but, they mess with the play too. So instead of just having a progression of stages that you just have to go through, like I would even go for like the usual model of, oh, you got 2 stars, maybe do this a little bit faster or with fewer dismounts and you'll get 3 stars. Cool. Just give me like 100 stages to do that and charge me $5 for it. We'll be A-okay. However, in this, there are like missions that you have to do. So it's like, do a front flip. And then we'll give you some coins that you can use to upgrade your bike so you can get better handlebars for better handling. And you need an engine to go faster and blah, blah, blah. And you're going to have to go through dialogue that you don't give any 2 fucks about. It's just, it was an affront. I deleted it off my iPad so quick that I had to actually look up what the name of it was before I came on here because I don't even have it. Oh, any more to reference. Yeah, so there's stupid dialogue, and like you start out with a bad bike. So like you're going on, it's like this game is about like, you know, executing the right moves at the right time. Why would they add you know, like a player disability? You know, like it should be my skill that's picking up as I go along and making this possible, not like, oh, grind to get the, you know, like to get enough coins to buy, you know, this particular thing. Then there's
The bad bike, is it unusable or is it just really simple?
It's almost unusable. So like think about if you played Tony Hawk, like Tony Hawk's Pro Skater, and you did like a custom, you know, like a custom skater before you spend any money upgrading the stats, like you kind of jump like bullshit and you don't really have any balance or whatever. So like on this, you know, you're required to do actual really, really minute adjustments to things, and if you don't have like the right handlebars, you can't, like if you pull back, it's gonna like whirr, and then you do a little backflip like standing right there. Well, no, you actually need to have like the ability to like lean back by like 5 degrees, because otherwise you're not going to make this jump, right? And like, so grinding wouldn't be that much of a problem. Like, okay, turn this into like an RPGS kind of thing. I can kind of get into that, whatever. However, you have fuel, okay? And each day you get a certain amount of fuel. And if you want to play the game more and get better at it and actually, like, you know, unlock things in a certain order, you have to pay them money to get fuel to go along.
Okay, so it's basically like a freemium mask or whatever.
So, hence at the beginning of this, why I said, oh, I went to download it and it said free. I mean, it looks fine. I kind of, like I said, I hate the fiction around it. The characters are ugly and stuff, but when you're actually in the game, it's okay. But all of the trappings around it, I just want like 50 levels that I can just go through and master, you know, but they're not going to give it to me. So yeah, that's Trials Frontier. Do you guys have any questions about that? I'm angry.
Would you say it is a good game?
No. Yeah, 7 out of 10.
Okay.
Oh god. The other one that I played, fortunately, is much better than that, because they actually charge you money for it, and then you own it. It's called Breakbeat Alley.
Okay.
Yeah. So think of it as Breakout, except instead of having a paddle, you tap on the screen to knock the ball back. So when you tap on the screen, it makes like a little circle of force. And so where you tap on it, where you tap on the screen in relation to the ball, gives it a different angle. And the and the blocks kind of advance towards you. And the block you hit gives your ball that color. And if you can hit a block of the same color on the ricochet, it'll give you more points, etc. And kind of the real trick of it is, and you know, aside from the fact that you're tapping this, so it's very, very, you know, kind of like physically and dexterity-ly demanding, is that you can tap on the screen and get another ball. So you can have, I've never tested the upper limits. I'm kind of working with 2 right now to see how it works. But you can have 2 on the screen that you are trying to keep in the air. And there's a line that the blocks can't cross or advancing towards you. And it even goes so far as if you break an entire column of them and you start hitting the back wall, they advance faster. So you have to be very, very mindful of where you're targeting stuff.
So almost like a Space Invaders type of thing.
Yeah, like a little bit, except without the shields. You are the shields. Your thumbs are the shields.
I don't need a shield. I am a shield.
Yeah. But it's really fun. Like, the presentation is great. You know, the music is just EDM, whatever. But the sound of the ball hitting the blocks, it sounds like a pinball breaking a glass window. it's just really satisfying. Like when you break one of those. So it's one of the few games that I'll play like with the sound on. You know, when I'm like laying on the couch watching an episode of The Simpsons or something like that. Just when I need something to do with my hands, like it'll just go. Yeah, I don't know. It's pretty good. It's called Breakbeat Alley. And in terms of like what I'm looking for in a mobile game as like a short little dexterity challenge, it's great. I'm playing it on the iPad. That seems to work a little bit better for me, even though I am, you know, you're traversing more screen. I'm playing it with my thumbs. So it makes it a little bit easier to pick a side of the screen and then stick with it. Okay. You know, this is my left paddle and this is my right paddle. So I guess it's like pinball in a little bit of a way. Yeah, I don't know. It's pretty good. But that's really all. I mean, I've been playing, you know, Rocksmith. But how's I figure going? You guys are tired of that. It's great. I'm progressing on a couple of songs. Mary Jane's Last Dance is tremendous fun. Just because that is, even on the lead, the kind of guitar that I'm used to playing a little bit. You know, kind of like a little bit of that palm muted chord bass kind of thing. Like that main riff, that dun. Yeah, I think I just did Taxman there, but you know what I mean. People have heard that song. They know. And then My God is the Sun by Queens of the Stone Age. I'm getting that one up. It's pretty close to 100% right now.
And so now, how's the transition then when you master a song on there and then you go to a regular guitar? Easy.
Well, I mean, it is just playing the regular guitar.
All right.
Yeah. So and what's great about it is like as you master a phrase – you know, and I like just if you play it correctly enough times and you fill up the bar and it starts showing you all the notes, it'll show you all of the notes to play, you know, and expect you to hit them. But after a while, it just fades the notes out.
Okay.
So as you're playing it, it's just kind of like, oh, you have the backing track and everything else playing, but you don't have any visual reference. You're just kind of going for it. Yeah, which is great. Good.
When you switch to not playing it with the game, or maybe this is part of playing it with the game, I don't know. From what little musical playing experience I have, it seems like there's sort of a difference between playing the notes that are written and playing the song the way it's supposed to sound, if that makes sense. Do you find any difficulty with that? Does it make any effort to teach that, or what?
That's part of the mastery process on it, honestly. Man, I'm sure the listeners are so tired of hearing this, but I love talking about it, so I'll keep doing it. I mean, it's memorizing the notes as they are, you know, as they are quote unquote supposed to be played, like, oh, you're hitting the right note in the right order at the right time. That actually is really detrimental to actually, you know, remembering how to actually play the song. So memorizing it is actually, you know, and the path to mastery on it is actually figuring out, okay, what's the intonation? Like, how is this articulated? And just the way that I learn music and the way that, you know, kind of I was taught to learn music is you learn it in phrases. So, you know, this solo isn't, you know, okay, I know that I'm in, you know, A pentatonic, so I'm just at the fifth fret, and I just kind of, like, noodle around on that. Like, oh, there's a bend here, and this note is accented, and you're playing it more with your ears than anything else, right? So, you know, it's like when I break away from it, and I don't know if that's just because I came into it already knowing a little bit about how to play guitar, you know, you come away from it, you know, kind of having that built in. And the game does a pretty good job of telling you a little bit about what your intonation should be. Like, it shows you accents. It shows you, okay, this is going to be a harmonic. It shows you, okay, this is going to be a hammer-on pull-off. Here are slides. It has notation for all of that, like all the little, you know, hand tricks that you have to do to get the right sound out of it. And to a certain extent, you have to learn, like, okay, this is how I make a good sound on this fret. Like, playing really, really high up on the neck is really different than playing really low down on the neck. And that's just stuff that you pick up as you play along. And the audio really helps you out with that because of the tone designer that they have. And just the fact that, you know, because they're playing with the masters, you know, like the actual master tracks, and, you know, eventually as you master it, it fades down the actual, like, you know, it fades down the recorded track, and what you're hearing is what you're playing. So if you know, at beyond a certain level, if what you're hearing is bullshit, you know that you're playing it like bullshit. And so Sure. You know, like, oh, that's all me, so I should probably learn to, like, be a little bit less sloppy when I strum this power chord. Or, you know, like, oh, when I'm hitting these, you know, these inter-chord notes or doing these fills, I should probably be a little bit more mindful of what I'm hitting because I'm getting buzzes and blah, blah, blah. And you iron that out.
Because otherwise the game will judge you.
like a little bit, like, you know, I think we covered this on one of the episodes where we talked about this, but you know, the game's engine isn't so much like it's listening for what you are playing, it only penalizes you when you don't play what it expects you to. If you play anything extra, it doesn't penalize you. And an actual guitar, like sloppy strumming or sloppy picking, you know, like hitting strings that you're not supposed to, can really ruin the sound of what you're playing. So sure, that is something you have to police for yourself. But, you know, the game gets you, you know, it puts you on the 90-yard line, I feel like, insofar as, like, here is a facsimile of playing this song with a full band, and you can practice it over and over again, and it will feed you just enough to, you know, to help you get better each time you play. Yeah,
that sounds cool.
Yeah, it's great. I love it. You know, I'm a little bit scared to check how long I've played it, but I think that in general I've been doing it about a half an hour a day.
Yeah, I mean, you don't want to think of it in terms of a video game. You want to think of it in terms of practicing music.
Exactly, yeah. And so that is a habit that I've wanted to get back into for a while, you know, and I feel like I've given all these reasons before. But you're absolutely right, Ben. Like, it is something where it is actually playing music, and it feels a little bit like the logical terminus of that kind of game. Like, you know, Ubisoft has just nailed it so damn hard. And I am eagerly awaiting when stuff goes on sale, because even though there is not a distinct lack of songs, you know, available, I would like to fill out, like, oh, there's the Weezer pack, but I don't feel like paying $12 for it. Well, I'll just see when that gets to be a thing, because I'll be damned if I'm not going to play Buddy Holly, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
I know that this seems a little cliche to say, but this sort of strikes me as being something that's kind of on my, like, this is the future radar, if that makes sense.
You know, the word I've used to describe the tech is spooky. Like, it works really well.
Right. It just seems like, I know, it seems like this was sort of seems like some of the realization of what, like, people started thinking about when, like, Guitar Hero got big.
Yeah. And then what they kind of got out with, you know, Rock Band and the drum set and stuff.
Right,
like, it's just good that there was, you know, somebody who thought to follow through on it. And it was a long road to get there. You know, there are lots of power gigs laying in this game's wake. yeah. I don't know. It's just a delightful game. It really, you know, I don't have the kind of newbie's perspective coming at it. You know, like, I can't speak to it as, like, a teaching tool for getting you from, you know, complete novice to intermediate, but from, like, intermediate to, you know, whatever is between intermediate and advanced. I wouldn't call myself advanced by any stretch of the imagination after, you know, a month of playing this game. However, you know, it's great. Yeah.
Cool.
You guys want to button it up?
Sure. It's a short level today.
Yeah, it is. It's you know, but I think that Dennis is the soul of our length. the soul of our lack of brevity. Yeah. So that was the 61st level. Thank you so much, everybody, for listening. You know, we're not going to pimp it every time. However, if you want to get these episodes a day early, if you're thinking, man, I'd like to hear this on Thursday and hear Cole at the beginning of each episode say the date, and it'll be tomorrow, I'm like a time traveler. We have that Patreon campaign. It is duckfeed.tv/tipjar. Clicking the little Patreon button takes you to that, and donating above a certain level gets you that little perk. And so I thank everybody who has gone out and supported that so far. It is humbling and heartening to have that. And that is, you know, already, you know, we're making plans for that. So fantastic. The other side of the tip jar is the Amazon link. You can just go there and hit that and then buy whatever you're going to buy. And then we get kickback from that. That is still something that helps keep the lights on. So yeah, there's that. But otherwise, specific to this show, You know, we have that Facebook page we mentioned before, facebook.com/thelevelpodcast. And it's been a minute since we had an iTunes review. So if you are of the kind of person who leaves iTunes reviews, that would be greatly appreciated. Am I missing anything, you guys?
Nah,
that seems to be good.
Yeah. So I've been Cole Ross, your host. I am at Cole Ross on Twitter.
I've been David Moneysmith, but not anymore. No, I've been David Moneysmith at MySmith777.
Ben Merkel at Merkelizer.
Cool. And just remember, if you don't know which way to go, just slide the slide and pump the pump. Good night.
So at the wedding that you're going to, you should try and institute the slide, pump the pump.
Yeah, the rule. Kick anybody out who's not doing that particular dance.
As a side note, if the slide gets locked back, you're out of ammo.
Oh, I learned that when I died in Nam.